that, something like that, exactly like that. Speaking more than he's ever spoken before in his writings. Speaking to the world through his writings. And in order to do that, he wants to have less responsibility speaking to one or two or three devotees about their personal problems, so that he can speak to the whole world for all time to come through his writings. A devotee never stops speaking, but a devotee very carefully speaks in the most productive and most merciful and most effective way. How could a devotee want to stop speaking? Because his life is meant for Krishna's glorification. But he will speak in such a way that the ultimate glorification of Krishna can come through him.
Sometimes we read that we have to just use that same technique, Prabhupada used a chopping technique, no compromise. But we on our own, at this stage, we also say in public that this person is an asker or this person is a fool. Is that okay or should we?
The chopping technique is only effective if you are an expert chopper. But if you are not expert chopper, you will end up chopping yourself. The magnanimity of Prabhupada's position, the gravity of his realization, that when he spoke, he was uncompromising. He would chop through illusion, chop through maya. We cannot imitate him. We have to present according to our realization what he is saying. Therefore, what was effective, the way he was effective, we have to be as uncompromising as him when it comes to the truth. But how we present it, we have to present it in such a way that it's that we can most effectively present. Prabhupada could be sitting with the main trustees of the Tirupati temple and tell them that they were in maya, and they would bow down and touch his feet and bring him to the front and call him guru. If you do that, they will just kick you out. Correct? Prabhupada was Prabhupada. Prabhupada was so heavy mostly for the sake of uncompromisingly teaching us, black and white, what is truth. And we have to present it in such a way that it's most effective. Well, Prabhupada would sometimes speak to his disciples publicly. He would preach the same thing in a different way to an individual. Like, for instance, to his disciples, one very famous guru, he said, he is a rascal. He is simply leading people to hell. He's bogus. Huh? To a particular famous so-called guru. When one of the disciples of that guru, the same guru, asked Prabhupada about him, Prabhupada said, what is his philosophy? And then the person presented the philosophy, and Prabhupada very politely just explained the fallacies of the philosophy, explained the problems with this person's philosophy and the higher philosophy of Krishna consciousness without saying anything bad about him. Right? And in this way, this person accepted, yes, my guru is wrong. But if Prabhupada would have just said he's a rascal, he would have left. So Prabhupada was saying the same thing, but in different ways. To his disciples, when they asked about this person, he said, he's a rascal. But to that person's disciple, he didn't say he's a rascal. He pretended like he didn't know who he was. He says, huh? Who? What is his philosophy? And then he just very carefully left the person to realize that he's a rascal without saying anything against him. Huh? So in this way, you have to preach in such a way that it is going to be effective. According to the time, according to the circumstance. Of course, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, one time his disciples went into a meeting and a very famous guru, they just said he was a rascal in public and almost everybody walked out. And they told Bhakti Siddhanta, and he was very happy. He said, yes, very good. So that is also perfect. So we have to learn from, according to the time and circumstance of Kaladesha Patra, the climate of the place, what's most effective for preaching. Hmm? Bhakti Siddhanta was obviously successful through that technique. He made over 60,000 disciples. Huh? And he was just cutting. So it worked. But if you do that, how many disciples will you make? Huh? You could say the same thing, but you have to do it in such a way that it's going to be effective in two ways, both collectively for the whole environment as well as for specific personalities. Hmm? Just like, for instance, yesterday a man who's been worshipping Lord Shiva from his birth, he says, now I'm becoming attracted to Krishna. Huh? He said, now I'm becoming attracted to Krishna. But I'm so attached to Lord Shiva, because from my birth I've been going to Babulnath Temple every Monday as long as I remember, and I worship Shiva and I love Lord Shiva, but now I'm becoming so much attracted to Krishna and I'm feeling, what should I do? Huh? Now, we could have said Shiva's a demigod, that means you're less intelligent, so you should surrender to Krishna, right? Which is true, right? On one level, he was worshipping Shiva as a demigod, no doubt. So it's true. But what if I said that? What would he have done? He would have immediately gone back to Babulnath Temple. So instead we said, yes, of course. Because you have worshipped Lord Shiva with such love and devotion for so many years, he is granting you the highest benediction he gives anyone, and that is bhakti to the feet of Krishna. So he said, yes, then I should become a devotee. Huh? So neither one is compromising. They're both saying the same thing, but saying it in such a way that a person will be elevated. Obviously, when Bhakti Siddhanta followers just did like that. According to Bhaktisiddhanta, the people who heard it, that's the best way they could have possibly been elevated. Huh? But we have to calculate, what's the best way a person can be elevated? That is best preaching. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if you read the Bhagavat, he saw that the British, they would not accept the Bhagavatam because of the fifth canto, the hellish planets. Right? They were thinking, this is not possible. And also the explanation of the universe and the hellish planets and all these things, they were thinking, how could God be so cruel that he would put people through such suffering and such hells? So they rejected the whole Bhagavatam on that basis. So what does Bhakti Vinod say? He was thinking, if they read the Bhagavatam nicely under our direction, then they will become elevated. So let's get them to read the Bhagavatam. He said, the fifth canto is a problem? All right, he said. Take it to be an allegory. He didn't say it was an allegory. He didn't say it wasn't true. He said, just that part, take it to be an allegory and read it. Read the Bhagavatam. They started reading. Is that a compromise? You see, we may think it is, but actually an expert preacher knows how to present things to elevate people. He didn't compromise in the sense that he didn't say it was. He just said, take it to be so that you can read it with ease. Also, Jiva Goswami. Rupan Sanatan uncompromisingly explained that Krishna and Radharani in Vrindavan is Paratiya Rasa. But Jiva Goswami explained Radha and Krishna's love affairs according to Swakiya Rasa, that they were married. Huh? He didn't reject Parakiya Rasa. He still accepted it. But he didn't teach it that way. With emphasis. Huh? He emphasized more the Swakiya Rasa. Was that a compromise? It may appear to us that it was, but actually it wasn't. Because according to the time and place, people were perverting Krishna's Sahajya class, was perverting Krishna's Parakiya Rasa into something terribly immoral in their own lives. Huh? They were grossly misunderstanding Krishna. In order to worship Radha and Krishna in a proper way, without this misunderstanding and without this propagating immorality, he very strongly emphasized the Swakiya Rasa between Radha and Krishna. Huh? So you see, great preachers, they know, without compromising the ultimate truth, they're bringing people to the same place. They may adjust the presentation different according to different circumstances, according to what will elevate the people closer to the uncompromised truth of pure Krishna consciousness. That is why I said the best preacher is the person who has the highest realizations of what actually that soul needs. And therefore, since we don't have such high realizations, we simply follow in the footsteps by taking guidance from those persons who immediately do have higher realizations. And gradually, through our purification, we get realizations of what a soul needs as we're preaching to them. So we should never compromise the absolute truth. But we have to present it in such a way that a person is elevated. I have spoke many times. I used to go to colleges in America preaching. I mean, we would set up so many lectures. As Devamrita can tell you, I'm grossly out of practice now. But we used to set up so many lectures We used to have average 6 lectures a day in the colleges. And then have like spent 3 days at that college, go to the next, go to the next, go to the next. 5 days a week, six lectures a day. Different professors inviting us. And we did this for a couple of years. And people would all be impressed by hearing the uncompromised philosophy of the Gita. But then we were thinking, unless people get regular association, they don't become devotees. And you can't give people regular association by giving lectures, because a professor will only invite you at the most once or twice a semester. And then he'll invite you every semester, but every semester it's different students in his classes, right? Indiana State University of Pennsylvania. We had 6 professors who liked us so much that we would speak for 3 days there. And they would all send all their students from all their classes to each lecture. So there would be like 500-600 students in each class. So we were preaching to 500-600 students 6 times a day, different students. So that means like several thousand students a day, right? Just classrooms, questions, answers, hour and a half each class. And I was thinking, they all seem so interested, but then I never see any of them again. So how to preach on the campus where you can actually cultivate people regularly? If you cannot preach philosophy on the campus and get people regularly, because it's the separation of religion and state. So we decided to have cooking class. Because the college will give you a room to teach cooking, as long as you're not speaking about religion. So we teach cooking. We wouldn't say anything about Krishna, not even one word. If we even mentioned the word Krishna, we were out. And they'd sit there for a half hour listening to why you should be a vegetarian, and then they'd see how to make chapatis and dal and parathas. And then afterward, after the class was over, where we didn't say anything, people would just ask about Krishna. Because you're wearing a dhoti, so they're going to obviously ask, what is this? Privately you can preach to anybody, but publicly you can... So many people became full-time devotees from that. And hundreds of people started reading books and everything. Coming to our temples. Huh? So in one sense it was a compromise. We were criticized by many, many people in ISKCON. That Prabhupada said we are not teaching vegetarianism. We are teaching Krishna consciousness. Vegetarianism is in the modes of material nature. It's a fact, no doubt. But they weren't reaching any college students. But this was working. We were not compromising the philosophy. Ultimately, we were teaching them exactly what's in the Gita. But we were just presenting it in such a way that it can elevate people. Huh? So in this way, we have to know when to speak and when to not speak. That doesn't mean we compromise. When we do speak, we speak the truth. But we do it in such a way that we are compassionately trying to elevate that person, not just self-righteously trying to defeat him. Yeah?
Regarding this, keeping silence and talking and something, I'm reminded of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj also had taken a vow to chant 9 lakh and then stop anything. And then in the Bible we hear of Jesus, 40 days he went into Krishna Vidya. And the Christians been giving a lot of important prayers and meditation in terms of solitude, in one sense. And even in my own experience, like life, this when I went to Pune for 1.5 months, it was the first time that I read Bhagavatam and the books very seriously, and that helped me so much. Now I realize it helped me in being fixed up in this Krishna consciousness. But of course, it is not this so-called thing is not for the neophyte devotees. We can't be in solitude and be thinking of more of benefits. But then it does help once in a way to like say just for reading and praying, and it does help sometimes. But then with the kind of schedule that we have and with the kind what the level that we are in, what is the best way of compromise? I mean, like some taking out some time for internal and introspection and also reading, and what kind of a thing would be ideal? Like sometimes when you go on a train journey, those 2-3 days have been so like introspective, what I've been doing for the food for life, and then suddenly we get an idea. Oh, all these days I've been doing, I could have done it this way. So these small 1.5 days, 2 days of staying alone. Which is while going, I was traveling to Vrindavan. That was that particular time when I was alone and to myself and reflecting, it did really help. So, but then of course, if we do it for too much, it will be only sense gratification and just laziness. So how do we see that we compromise but at the same time get the maximum benefit of this?
Surrender. You're sent to Vrindavan and you have 1.5 hour days in a train. You're not sent, you should just do your seva.
Let Krishna.
Just be a surrendered soul. If you're a surrendered soul, the time when Krishna wants to reveal something to you, be in silence, then he'll give you a service where you'll be in silence. Alone. Huh? Be the servant. Don't make your own program. Krishna would not have revealed that to you in the train if you decided on your own, I'm just going to go for 1.5 days. Devamrita, I don't care what you say, I'm going 1.5 days because I need solitude. He would have not revealed that to you. But he revealed it to you because you were wholesale surrendering to him. It wasn't the solitude that caused Krishna to reveal. It was your surrender that he revealed in that time. So just surrender, that's all. Don't make your own program. But Brahmachari should have at least 1 hour a day where they can just be alone to study books, to write, like that. That should be there. You don't have to go some distant place just to regularly be alone where you can sit and you can read and you can pray. That should be there sometime every day. To your question? Is there any other questions? Actually, if you are aware, if you are conscious, you will find there's so much seclusion. When you're dressing the deities, isn't that total seclusion? It's just you and Krishna. Right? There's no talking. just the total meditation on total internal meditation on what you're offering to Krishna. Right? Is there any talking on the altar? It's 1.5 hours of complete silence, immersed in devotional service. During japa, whether you chant loudly or softly, the fact is it's just you and the holy name. Seclusion. When you're reading, also when you're listening to Bhagavatam class, this is you and the Bhagavat. There's no talking, right? You're just sitting silently listening. So in one sense, there are so many processes by which we are really in a secluded state if we're just conscious of that, where everything else is stopped and we're simply in that contemplation on either Krishna sound or Krishna seva. Very important. But hopefully we'll be getting some land close to Bombay. And then brahmacharis can go for 2 days at a time and just read and chant in a total quiet atmosphere. We will be doing like that. We will send devotees, especially those who are second initiated. New devotees we don't want, but the devotees who have second initiation, for 2-3 days at a time, we will send to this land in Panwell, and you can just sit and read and chant throughout the day.
And I have somebody on me, Maharaj. I am not yet fit for that. I will engage in too much in gratification.
Anyway, we would like to do like that for devotees. Not that you go every day. But every few months. Or maybe 2 devotees going. Nothing but vow of only Krishna Katha. Our vow of silence is not no talking. But no talking except Krishna Katha. Bhajan, kirtan. Any other questions? Yes?
Well, you have performed so much austerity, people used to give you instructions, do this, do this. It was a very big time. You were able to stop sleeping the whole night. Anytime, it didn't, you feel it frustrated, you feel it so tired, you feel it like, how much I have to do? It doesn't have any mercy on me. That way, you are not feeling.
All those years, I never remember even once considering leaving. I just accepted it. I have to surrender. Nothing else. Understood from reading Prabhupada's books that if you're not submissive, you cannot make proper spiritual advancement. So I was just trying to be totally submissive. In those days, it was probably for a couple of years at least, I wasn't getting more than 2 to 3 hours sleep a day. Because besides doing all night kirtan, I was head pujari at the Brahmacharya Ashram. It's almost an hour walk up and down this mountain. And I just go up, wake the deities, bathe the deities, dress the deities, offer the bhoga, offer the arti, after Mangal Arti and everything. By the time I was finished, everyone was gone except me, so I had to do all offerings, all artis. In between offerings and artis, I would just sleep 15 minutes here, half hour here, and jump up, bathe again. Plus I had boils. That they told me to do. I wasn't an advanced devotee or anything. I was just trying to do my service. But I don't remember even considering leaving. Don't even remember one time that seriously crossing my mind. I was just thinking how fortunate I am to have some service. Of course, if I were like you, a very skillful, successful person, I may have considered. But because I realize that I'm a totally useless fool, I might as well just stay here and do my service. What else am I going to do? Huh? So, Krishna's benediction that he made me such a useless fool. The only thing that kept me in Krishna consciousness. Huh? But the fact is, if we don't think we're useless fools, Maya will steal us away. We must always think we're useless fools. Then we'll always be submissive and do anything. Today is Tattva's birthday. Adi Keshav's son Madhava came specially today to offer his Vyas Puja to Tattva Prabhu. Correct? Any other questions? Devamrit Prabhu, any comments? Realizations of Krishna consciousness on the path of bhakti come through surrender. They don't come through external devices. They come through surrender. Today is Jayadev Goswami's disappearance day. We spoke. You heard some stories I told this morning in class about Jayadev Goswami. But what he's most famous for is Gita Govinda. So most places they read Gita Govinda on this day. But according to our acharyas, Gita Govinda is very advanced. In fact, Bhakti Vinod Thakur and the descendants coming through him have explained that this is meant for the highest devotees, not for what he was. In fact, Jayadeva Goswami in the introduction to Gita Govinda writes this, that this is for very, very advanced Rasika Bhaktas, this book. Not for ordinary devotees, for devotees who have already attained that Rasika stage of entering into the bhav, the love of Radha and Krishna. It is for their transcendental pleasure. Huh? But today we like to take things cheaply. But it's not through reading these pastimes, these intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna, that we enter into those rasas. It is through surrender. It is through surrender to Guru and surrender to the Vaishnava's order that Krishna gives us real entrance into those rasas. And after attaining, through the process of surrender, that pure state of consciousness, then we can read these things and we can actually experience the realizations that are meant to be had. Mm-hmm. Not just imagination. One of the hardest things to surrender to is preaching, because there's so much opposition. Therefore, Guru Maharaj has told us that you just surrender to assisting in this preaching mission, and Krishna will give you entrance into all of the higher realms of realizations. Hmm? Other Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they do not preach. They like to just sit in Vrajbhumi and just meditate on these higher stages of bhava. Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhakti Vinod, Prabhupada, they taught us, no, don't be artificial. You just go into the cities and preach. You'll realize the rasa of Vrindavan more there than sitting in Radhakund. Huh? Evil.